reaction to ongoing work in progress with Shane. Well, it's been a pleasure, you know. It has turned out over the past, you know, in the past year or so, Ivan Todorov and Michel Dubois-Violette have put out a series of very, very fascinating and inspiring papers about a topic very closely related to the one that I'm going to talk about, but I'll be coming at it from a different perspective. But we both, and it's something that Shane and I have also been thinking about for years, and we both seem to be converging on being interested in the same sort of thing, but from a different direction, which is that, in short, that maybe there's something interesting about thinking of the geometric structure of space-time as not just being ordinary four-dimensional space-time, but maybe with a, if you want, extra dimensions or something like that, which are some sort of discrete space and described by a kind of Jordan algebra, and trying to think about the physical and geometric implementation of those ideas. And indeed, actually, we thought for years about trying to make the exceptional Jordan algebra fit with the standard model, and never were quite able to make it work. And so it's been very exciting that they've realized something. They made major progress on that. So I'll tell you about a slightly different line of thought, but I'm hoping actually it'll somehow connect up eventually with the work of Todorov and Dubois-Violette. We'll see. I mean, it doesn't quite yet, but I hope it will. Okay, so you know, so this is a question in the same spirit of the previous talks of the morning. Somehow the idea is that the standard model, if you really take it seriously, is some great jigsaw puzzle that hasn't been fully assembled. You know, there's all these different bits and pieces about it that we don't understand, and it would be great to find a perspective on it where we understand more things make sense, more things fit together that we don't currently see how they fit together. This is a little sort of detective story, and that we're still midway through, and I want to sort of try to summarize quickly a few pieces of the story. So let's start by thinking about two famous goals in fundamental physics. Okay, there's goal one, which is to unify gravity with the other fields in physics. The gravitational field with the electromagnetic field, all the other fields. That's one dream. And then another one is to unify gravity with quantum mechanics. Okay. So, there's a famous approach to one, which is to try to interpret, you know, Einstein taught us that gravity was all about describing the geometry of four-dimensional space-time. And one approach to unifying gravity with the rest of the forces is to think of the gravitational field and all of the other fields as also describing the geometry of something, but it's not just ordinary four-dimensional space-time, it's some appropriately extended space-time. So in particular, this idea goes back to a famous proposal, which I'll call solution, you know, the first solution to goal one, which I'll call 1A, goes back to Kaluza and Klein 100 years ago, and of course is still with us in string theory. And the basic idea there, as you all know, is that the extended space-time is extended by an internal manifold, the extra-dimensional manifold. So if this is our 3 plus 1 dimensional manifold, M4. Then above each point, Kalitza and Klein imagine there's a fiber, which is some internal manifold, which I'll call M internal. And the idea is that maybe gravity on this extended space describes the whole fancy universe that we see when viewed from the four-dimensional standpoint. And, well, to make a long story short, there have been problems with this idea. This is kind of a beautiful idea that in one way or another, many people have been obsessed with for the past 100 years. But it runs into difficulties. So the problems, well, fundamentally, there's one problem is that it just predicts too many fields. So we seem to see a finite collection of fields around us in nature. Kalitza-Klein theories always predict that according to a four-dimensional observer, there should be an infinite tower of fields. And we just don't see them. So then the other problem, famous problem, is that it turns out to be devilishly hard to completely stabilize the extra dimensions in these theories. So it's hard to stabilize the internal manifold. And there, of course, there's most famously the modern implementation of the stabilization mechanism is KKLT and its subsequent variants. And the corresponding landscape problem. So it may be possible to stabilize the internal dimensions in principle, but it doesn't look terribly beautiful what you get when you go that route. So why? Why fundamentally are there problems with this approach? Well, I mean, it really boils down to a fundamental reason, which is also the one that Penrose always emphasizes, which is that the internal space, the extra dimensions, are a smooth manifold. Or, equivalently, well, closely relatedly, that the algebra of functions over the internal manifold is infinite dimensional. That's why one is predicting an infinite number of fields for a four-dimensional observer. Okay, so that suggests a second approach to goal one, which I'll call solution 1B, a modified version of the Kalitza-Klein dream, which is to replace the continuous internal manifold by some discrete or finite space. Okay, so somehow pictorially, instead of having over each point in 4D a continuous manifold, let's imagine we have some discrete space, which I'll just schematically represent by a matrix. So some sort of discrete extra dimensions, but the point is something as naive as just taking this manifold and discretizing it, triangulating it or somehow. And we want to figure out what thing seems most appropriate.
Sorry, when you say infinite dimensional, you mean infinitely many
In general, Kalitza-Klein will only predict a finite number of massless fields. That's true. But an infinite number of predicts an infinite number of fields. Period. Yeah, and yeah, indeed. One possibility is to say that they're all hidden at some very high energy that we can't access. And
but the difficulties are to stabilize the massless ones. So why does it matter if
I guess I'm saying two different things. First of all, the fact that there's an infinite number means you predict infinitely more fields than you actually see. But secondly, the fact that it's infinite dimensional is just related to the fact that it's a smooth manifold that can be continuously deformed, and the massless fields parameterize the lowest energy deformations of those. So indeed, those are the things you have to stabilize. That's right. But I mean, the reason there are massless fields corresponding to deformations of the space is connected to the fact that there is a connected to the fact that it's continuous. I mean, connected to the fact that you can continuously grow it or shrink it or something like that.
So you want to avoid to have any massless field?
I don't want to avoid any massless field. No. That's not. No, I don't want to say that exactly. I just want to say that if I have a finite dimensional internal space, that will predict a finite spectrum of fields.
In general,
because of course we don't just see massless fields; we see some combination of massless and massive fields. So it predicts a finite spectrum of fields. Period. So I'm hoping to match the fields we see on the nose, or as close as possible to that. Ideally, I would like to, as close as possible, not say that there are an infinite number of fields predicted by the theory that I just. Can't see because I've pushed them to very high energies.
Sorry, so internal space actually is dynamical itself. You're saying the massless.
Well, it can or cannot be depending. So what I would like to do is try to write down. I want to try to get to what this internal space is going to be like by looking at what it need to be to match the structure of the standard model. And then the idea that the next talk by Shane will be about to actually write down an action for it, you need to understand some things about what are the analogs of the normal ingredients that you build actions out of on this extended type of space. So let me get there. Let me get there. This is to both of these things. I need to explain a little bit more before. For example, yes, if you had a finite spectrum, if you had a finite space that was not dynamical, then that would predict that would still because it once you tensor it with the continuous space time, for reasons that Shane will hopefully describe, that will still predict dynamical fields from the four-dimensional standpoint, but that would be a way of doing away with the stabilization process in some sense ab initio. Let's see. I don't. Anyway. Let's leave that for Shane's talk. So now the internal algebra will be finite dimensional. A nice thing to note about a space like this is that, so normally, the algebra of functions on our ordinary four-dimensional manifold is basically, this algebra of the smooth functions on M. And so in a sense, this is the you can think of this as the coordinate algebra. The coordinates are drawn from the smooth functions on M. And the automorphism group of this algebra is exactly the diffeomorphism group of M. So in other words, there's a kind of dual, these are exactly the symmetries. If you just had four-dimensional space-time with gravity and nothing else, you would have this, these would be the symmetries of your theory, the diffeomorphisms of M. And there's this dual way to think about those symmetries as the automorphisms of the algebra of functions living over that space. Now, if we have this extended space-time consisting of this times this, then the algebra of functions is C infinity of M tensor A int. And now, the analog of the diffeomorphism group here is the automorphism group of this algebra. And this is diff M semi-direct product with the group of maps from M to the automorphisms of A int. So in other words, sorry, I've written this in a kind of unfamiliar form, but in other words, if I chose A int so that the automorphism groups of it were SU3 times SU2 times U1. So if I choose my finite algebra so that it has this as its automorphism group, then the automorphisms of the full algebra will be exactly the symmetries of the standard model coupled to gravity. Diffeomorphisms times, this is exactly now the gauge group for the standard model, and the semi-direct product is exactly how they interact. Whereas, if you instead, in Kaluza-Klein, there's kind of a usual puzzle, which is that, the automorphism group is C infinity of M4 times M int, which is, you might think, oh, well, if I choose the internal manifold to somehow have as its isometry group, something like SU3 times SU2 times U1, maybe this would give the same answer. But no. This is a much. The diffeomorphism group of this full extended manifold is a much bigger group. It's not a semi-direct product like this. Because it also includes all of these diffeomorphisms that don't preserve the fiber. I mean, diffeomorphisms that mix up the points from this space into this space, et cetera. Okay, so that's the first thing I want to say. I want to pursue solution 1b. Tried to motivate solution 1b here, that the internal geometry is a finite space. So what about goal 2? Okay, if we think about goal 2.
Sorry, wait. So if you make the internal space discrete, how do you get automorphism still SU3 plus SU2 plus U1?
Because the internal, well, by discrete, I mean it's a real, what you shouldn't imagine, it can't just be the kind of discrete space that you might be imagining. It's not just that I've taken a line and cut it in and turned it into, replaced it by a lattice. Because the coordinate algebra of that, that lives over that, would not be the algebra that I want. That would just be the reals, plus the reals, plus the real. It would just be, so that's not what I want. I want to do something, I'm going to have to do something fancier where the internal space has a coordinate algebra that lives over it, but that can mix points together. So the coordinates, this will be some sort of, in non-commutative geometry, you would have a non-commutative, you would have a matrices that can mix these things, mix points together. Now I'm going to take a Jordan algebra instead, but it has that same kind of flavor. So the point is, if you have an appropriate non-commutative algebra that acts on the discrete space, then it can have that group. And the statement is that the hint from nature is that if you want to follow this perspective where there's an internal group, internal space, it apparently has that structure. Okay, so let me just try to remind. So I'm trying to end at 10 till, is that right? Yeah. Okay, so so now approach to goal two, unifying geometry with quantum mechanics. Well, there's another long-standing dream, which is to find some sort of some notion of quantum geometry, some generalization of classical geometry that sort of incorporates quantum mechanical effects in an intrinsic way. And maybe the most widely studied implementation of this, which I'll call solution 2A, is non-commutative geometry. Okay, that somehow the somehow to generalize the in ordinary geometry, the algebra of coordinates is just the ordinary commutative algebra of smooth functions. And you generalize that to some non-commutative algebra and then try to make a consistent notion of geometry that's compatible with that. And the first, let me just say here, the main thing I want to say, there's been a lot of work on trying to develop non-commutative geometry, and there's a number of different paths to developing it in the math literature. I'll just say that the first attempt to follow solution 1B, the one that I want to follow here, assumed also solution 2A. So the first attempt to make the finite space space discrete also assumed that the assumed 2A assumed that the way the space would be described was in terms of non-commutative geometry. And this, as Ivan said, dates back to the late 80s and originated with work of Dubois-Violette and Kerner and Mador, and separately Kahn. And it's been developed a lot over the subsequent 30 years with some successes and some failures. Okay. But so I want to basically make the point that without getting into the details of what is good and bad about this approach, that there's sort of something basic that seems wrong about it, which is that, I mean, non-commutative geometry is appropriate as a quantum geometry of phase space. Not space-time. I mean after all, it's in phase space that the Qs and Ps don't commute. And so it was starting with classical phase space, this symplectic manifold, nice classical geometry, and suddenly having the coordinates no longer commute. That's what led to, you know, non-commutative geometry. But, you know, the Qs commute with themselves, as far as we know in quantum mechanics. And so it's not clear at all why one would think, it seems like a very non-conservative approach to think that the quantum generalization of space-time is non-commutative geometry. So in other words, non-commutative geometry is a good quantum generalization of symplectic geometry, but not of the sort of pseudo-Riemannian geometry that we use in general relativity. So what to do instead? And so the proposal here, which again is still I must say a work in progress, but the proposal is that we think it is the more appropriate thing is to replace non-commutative geometry by Jordan geometry, by which I mean that instead of taking the internal algebra, this internal finite dimensional algebra to be instead of taking the algebra of functions to be a non-commutative geometry, a non-commutative algebra, I want to take it to be a Jordan algebra. So let me tell you what that is. Okay, so a Jordan algebra arose because Jordan, in the early days of, you know, in the dawn of quantum mechanics, Jordan realized it was weird to work with this algebra. You know, you work with the normal Heisenberg algebra of operators on phase space, and they don't commute. But I mean, most of the operators in this algebra are not Hermitian. They're not observable things. So why are we carrying around all of these non-observable operators? Can you reformulate quantum mechanics just in terms of the observables, the Hermitian operators? Well, an obvious problem is that if you have a Hermitian operator and you take the ordinary matrix product with another Hermitian operator, then their product is not a Hermitian operator. I mean, the conjugate of this thing is not equal to the original thing if H1, H2, and H1 don't commute. So what he realized was that to make these operators form an algebra, you have to define a different product. You have to take their anticommutator. The anticommutator of two Hermitian operators does close. It is another Hermitian operator. So this defines a well-defined algebra. And this sort of thing is what we now call a Jordan algebra. And alternately, if we had taken anti-Hermitian operators, they would close under a commutator. You have to take a commutator of two anti-Hermitian guys to get another anti-Hermitian guy. And that's, of course, an algebra we know and love, that's a Lie algebra. Okay, now, in both of these algebras, the product, if you want, is not the matrix product, it's this other product, either this or this. And so in both cases, these are not associative algebras. So you're familiar with that for Lie algebras. So what that means, in other words, is if I first take the product of H1 and H2, and then I take the product with H3, you know, that's not equal, if you just check with matrices, you'll see that's not equal to first taking the product of H2 with H3, and then taking the product with H1. Okay, so in other words, these are algebras, just like for commutativity, we define the commutator AB to be AB minus BA, and then when this thing is not zero, we call that a non-commutative algebra. Similarly, we define the associator ABC to be ABC minus ABC, in other words, the two different ways of putting the brackets. And if that thing is non-zero, that's non-associative. So these are both two different, very special types of very nicely behaved non-associative algebras. So Jordan reformulated quantum mechanics in terms of these Jordan algebras. And so shortly afterward, as was briefly mentioned in Ivan's talk this morning, Jordan and von Neumann and Wigner classified the Euclidean Jordan algebras and found that they came just like you can classify the Lie algebras, and they come in four infinite families and a few exceptional cases. In this case, they come in four infinite families and one exceptional case. The four infinite families, again, are the J-spin 9. So this is basically if you take the, sorry, J-spin n, I meant to say. So this is if you take the first n gamma matrices and only allow them to take products which are anticommutators. you get this algebra. And then the other ones are just the n by n Hermitian matrices, the n by n Hermitian matrices over the real numbers, the n by n Hermitian matrices over the complex numbers, the n by n Hermitian matrices over the quaternions, and the exceptional one is the 3x3 guys over the octonions. Okay, so and so it's very analogous here. Normally and classically, when we want to get from phase space back to space time, we somehow want to take half of the phase space coordinate. We want to just preserve half. We want to preserve a half of these coordinates that commute with one another. And in the quantum version, if we start with a non-commutative algebra of operators O that are sort of the quantum generalization of the phase space coordinates, we want to take half, and we can split this guy into half. There's a Hermitian part and an anti-Hermitian part. So taking this to be the generalization of the space-time coordinates is essentially saying that, you know, it's the generalization of thinking of space-time as the different points in space-time as labeling the physically distinct places you can be, physically distinguishable places you can be. So here we're going to label those more directly by the observables by which you would distinguish them. So now, in the final, so I hope I've motivated why I'm using solutions 1b and 2b. I want to take a discrete internal space described by a Jordan geometry and Jordan algebra instead of a non-commutative algebra. And now, okay, well now, to connect to physics, So we have been thinking about this for a while, but we were, you know, at the time, for the past several years, we have been thinking about, so as I mentioned, for three decades, Kahn and collaborators have developed a notion of non-commutative, a way of capturing the standard model with a formalism that they call non-commutative geometry. And in short, their way of doing geometry, they have a way of generalizing Riemannian geometry with certain basic ingredients and axioms, which to some extent have been motivated on mathematical grounds, and to some extent have been motivated in order to correctly capture the physics. But in any case, just to be very brief, the idea there is that instead of in Riemannian geometry where you take a manifold and the metric on that manifold as the basic data, just to get you started, they take something different, which they call a spectral triple, which consists of the algebra, if you want the algebra of coordinates, a Hilbert space on which that algebra is represented, that's thought of as the space of spinners, eventually, in physics terms, and then a differential operator, which also a Hermitian operator, which also acts on H, which in physics terms can be thought of as the Dirac operator on these spinners. And the idea is that this carries the information about the metric on the manifold. Anyway, so they have a whole bunch of axioms that these basic data are supposed to describe. And one thing that Shane and I did over the past several years, culminating in a paper in JHEP last year, was show that all of those long list of axioms that nearly all of them can be more condensedly compactified into the statement that A plus H should form an algebra, a new algebra B, which is the same sort as A. So, and then once you add D, you can think of this as the algebra of zero forms, and D, roughly speaking, extends this into a differential graded algebra, which you can think of as the like the algebra of something like the non-commutative generalization of the algebra of differential forms. Anyway, my point is just this, that so that's the short encapsulation of this, that we found this kind of neat way of rewriting things. And so it came as a big surprise when a few years ago John Barrett pointed out to me something that he has not published but had noticed, which is that so if you look at the actual algebra and representation that Kahn chooses to describe the standard model of particle physics, as he normally presents it, it's quite gross. Because he writes it, I mean, it's been chosen to give exactly the right structure of the standard model, but it's represented on a very big column vector, H, and it's this kind of weird, so it's some 96 by 96 matrix with bits and pieces. But, so, well, I lost my eraser. What Barrett had noticed is that there's a way to rewrite it, which is very neat, which is that the algebra is represented by an 8x8 matrix, which I won't even say the particular form, but it has an upper, it's block diagonal with a 4x4 part up here and a 4x4 part down here. And then it's represented on a Hilbert space like this, which is block off diagonal. So there's the 16 spinners of a single generation are in this upper 4x4 block. And then the corresponding anti-spinners appear down here just as the dagger. So it represents the spinners as a sort of nice block off diagonal 8x8 Hermitian matrix. Well, so suddenly that seems to jive very well with this picture that A and H should be combined into the same algebra. I mean, look, they're both now 8x8 Hermitian. They're both 8x8 matrices, and it turns out that the left action and the right action of this and this, this on this, are exactly the normal matrix actions. So the only thing that this doesn't have is that this is now a nice Hermitian matrix, looks just like the kind of element of a Jordan algebra that we would want, whereas this is not a Hermitian matrix in Kahn's presentation, because he's working with just non-commutative associative algebras. So there's a question, can you replace this by another 8x8 representation of some Jordan algebra in order to also get the right gauge group, SU3 times SU2 times U1. And it's interesting, you can do it, and there's a unique way to do it. So if you want to preserve, so you see this thing I forgot to mention, this thing is a super algebra with even part A and odd part H. And so that's reflected here in the fact that the even part is block diagonal and the odd part is block off diagonal. So suppose you want to now replace this by a Jordan algebra, but keep this part block diagonal and this part block off diagonal. There's only one way to do it. The 4x4 thing here turns out to be J2C, the 2x2 complex Hermitian matrices in the upper 2x2 block, and then there's J spin 2, which is another 2x2 block. And then J3C, the 3x3 complex Hermitian matrices, and then the real numbers down here. And so now you can ask, what's the induced transformation of the spinners? Do they match the standard model fields? And okay, here's what the induced transformation is. You can just work it out. I'll make a little table here. Okay, so the fermions in the standard model, in a single generation of the standard model, are the left-handed lepton doublet, the right-handed up quark, the right-handed down quark, the left-handed lepton, the right-handed neutrino, and the right-handed electron. Okay, and their representation when you act on them, their representation under the automorphisms of B, well, the quarks transform correctly. the quarks transform as triplets. In other words, these 16 fermions break up into these 16 fermions, and where you get these certain subset behaving as threes as they should, another subset corresponding to the leptons behaving as singlets under SU3 as they should. There are fermions corresponding to the left-handers, which transform as doublets. There are fermions corresponding to the right-handers, which transform as singlets. Okay, so far so good. But then when you work out the U1 charge, it looks like something goes wrong. You get 0, 1 half, minus 1 half, 0, 1 half, minus 1 half. Okay, which at least is anomaly free, but it's not the right answer. The right answer that we're supposed to get is 1 sixth, 2 thirds, minus a third, minus a half, 0, and minus 1. Okay, that's the hoped for answer. But, okay, wait, we're not dead yet. Because that was really the automorphisms. You see, those are the automorphisms of this algebra and the transformations they induce on this guy. But really what we want, according to our perspective, is the automorphisms of this full algebra B. And there's one more automorphism, so-called outer automorphism. There's one more U1, which is U1 B minus L, which is famously the one other anomaly-free U1 you can add to the standard model fermion content. So that has so there the charges are 1/3, 1/3, 1/3, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1. So secretly, this is equivalent now. This table is equivalent to the table of charges for the standard model, augmented by B minus L. So because this column actually turns out to be just a linear combination of hypercharge and B minus L. So by a change of basis, actually, this is nothing but the table of charges for the standard model, augmented by an extra U1 B minus L symmetry, which could be there, although admittedly, we haven't seen it yet. So the prediction is that if the finite space is a finite Jordan algebra, that you appear to need, if you try the closest you can get to getting the standard model bang on the nose, is you appear to need an extra U1 B minus L. So you might say that seems to be a prediction of this approach. And maybe I should stop there. Yes. So there's a lot more to do, of course, to make full physics out of this. And Shane will be talking next, and we'll discuss some of those things. A nice thing about Jordan algebras is that, compared to non-commutative algebras, any Jordan algebra is associated with a very beautiful differential graded algebra that is built over it, just like there is over a Lie algebra. And so there's a very natural generalization. It seems like there's a very nice generalization of the notion of differential forms and the ingredients that you need to build an actual action in physics. And so that's only partially completed, but Shane will say more about that next.
Thank you very much.
Now you were a bit quick, I think, with dismissing space-time coordinates which are not commutative. There's a very simple hand-waving argument why you should expect this, mm-hmm. particularly from general relativity.
From black hole.
General relativity is about space-time curvature, so coordinates which get curved, and these coordinates describe positions of particles.
Mm.
Whereas the source of this curvature is energy and momentum, which of course do not commute with positions. So now you see that the positions at the end of the line will be not commuting with themselves.
Hmm. Well, okay, that's quite a nice argument, actually. So that does sound like it suggests that once you fold gravity into the game, that probably you're right.
Yeah.
I think that you know, I tend to like to think that there's a regime in this approach where you're just describing where it's trying to geometrically reinterpret, you know, just as a starting point, just geometrically interpret flat space physics, the standard model itself in geometric terms, and maybe my statement applies more to that context. That's a good point.
Actually, I'm using this in my way of handling the black hole information paradox, mm-hmm. which I'll talk about tomorrow after this colloquium.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You see how it works. So it's more complicated than just saying that coordinates are not commute. You can imagine that that's not what Einstein's equations are saying, but it's something that's akin to that.
Yes, Carol.
Can you explain what fermions are? From the point of view of journal algebras, that wasn't clear.
That's a very interesting question. I mean, so this thing is a. I mean, I guess you would say that this is the. This was, if you want, the coordinate algebra, but then once I represent it on fermions, I get this kind of extended thing with this slight extension of my original algebra, which is now a super algebra with even bosonic part here and odd fermionic part here, and this thing is nilpotent, so the elements of H squared is zero. So it's like a version in fact, I kind of wonder, I don't know, it's maybe very vague, but I wonder whether it bears any relation to what Andras talked about. But maybe it is interpretable as some sort of super space extension of the Jordan algebra. I'm not really sure. I mean, you know, it's just kind of a funny thing, which I don't know how to interpret, that the fermions in this approach seem to, that the whole thing is expressed most neatly. I mean, this is what John Barrett noticed, is that the whole formalism is expressed most neatly if you write the fermions in this 8x8 block off diagonal form as a matrix. And so I don't know, I haven't really figured out quite what that is saying, but.
Concretely for you, your journal algebra is diagonal, and then fermions are this off diagonal matrix.
Exactly, yeah.
So let's think
again. All right.